Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 53. The crew today, Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. It's all about the basketball. Just wrapped up the Battle of the Titans, or better known as the ACC Men's Basketball Championship. The NCAA Selection Committee has made their choices known. Who's headed to the NIT? In the great American tradition of what have you done for me lately? Well, let's talk about the bracket. Nine teams make the cut from the ACC. The third number one seed, North Carolina. Maybe a surprise. We'll find out from the guys here in just a moment what they think. Duke and Louisville get two seeds. Florida State is a three. Virginia and Notre Dame are five seeds. Miami is eight. Virginia Tech gets a nine seed. Wake Forest has to play in as an 11 seed. They will take on Kansas State. Let's talk about the bracket and ACC teams. You see any surprises in this mess, Will?
Not really. I think I was on board with UNC being a number one for a while now. And even with Duke's run in the ACC tournament, I thought they were just going to come up a little bit short and end up being the two seed, which they ended up being. And funny thing, this is the selection committee chairman actually said during the show that Duke was actually a four seed entering the week, which tells you just how much they value their run to the ACC championship. Louisville is a two. That, like I said, that's about where I expected. Florida State a three. That's about where I expected. Thought Notre Dame might actually get a four. I thought, especially after getting to the title game. But, mm-hmm. I mean, a five, you know, whatever. It's okay. Virginia, a five seed is exactly where I thought they'd be. Thought Miami and Virginia Tech would be in the 8-9 games, and that's exactly where they were. Doesn't surprise me Wake Forest is in the playing game. I'm glad they got in. They deserve to be in, especially with the way they closed the regular season. They didn't have a great showing in the ACC tournament getting bounced, but there was no shame in losing in the second round of the ACC tournament. But that, like I said, they deserve to be in ahead of Syracuse, who will likely be in the NIT.
Yes, indeed. Now let's jump over to Chris here and have his thoughts on these seedings. And how are these teams coming across to you? Will thinks they're pretty much in the right place. What are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, for the first time in the time that I can remember, I think common sense really is the order of the day and the seedings here, as far as we can see from the ACC and in general overall. I'm right there with Will, really, as far as where these teams got. I'm a little surprised that Notre Dame only got a five. I really thought of them as a four or even a three, especially that run getting to the title game. Duke was rightly rewarded. I think getting to that two seed would – having to play an extra day in the hardest, arguably the hardest conference tournament in America, and winning it is just another feat in Coach K's cap there, you know, and among just throwing the pile with the rest of them. As far as individual observations, I like Louisville's chances actually getting to the Elite Eight there, because I can see with Oklahoma State in there with them, Oregon, Creighton. These are almost all these teams, except for maybe Rhode Island, are teams that like to run. And Louisville, that's tails right in the way Pitino likes to move his offense. And plus, he's got a very mobile front court to go with that. So that really like their chances in that grouping. I got to tell you, I think it's a tough matchup, a bad matchup for Florida State, actually, in the sense that they're going to get Florida Gulf Coast here in the first round. People may remember Florida Gulf Coast went on quite a run here a couple years ago, and there's still some players on that team, which, by the way, has eight seniors, and all of their starting five are all seniors on that team.
Well, that's kind of a home game for both of them.
Exactly. Well, more you're not getting a first-time program their first bid ever,
right?
Coming 2,000 miles away. This is they're going to be well represented there in Orlando up here, about an hour and a half from where I live here. So, you know, that's a game that Leonard Hamilton needs to be wary, very wary of, and especially when he's got a young team that there's not a lot of tournament experience going against a team that has tournament experience and deep run experience as well.
The guys on CBS during the actual selection show were very high on FGCU and thought that they were probably one of those teams that's going to be upset bound.
Justifiably. So, yeah. I have to agree with him.
That's an interesting thought, and we'll keep an eye on that. Let's go back over the bracket here for just a moment, because there's one thing that I noticed, and I've been keeping an eye on bracketology, as you guys have, through the entire season as it's come up, you know, from Lenardi, from Palm, from some other sources that we have that we look at that are very accurate for the most part. But the one thing that strikes me about this is that, and I really like the way this laid out, the only side that has three teams in it is the East, and that's Virginia Tech, Virginia, and Duke. So that's an interesting run there to see mm-hmm. who's going to come out of that. That is not an easy. That's not yeah. an easy.
Especially
mix.
When you look at Virginia's played a lot of teams in that region this year. Obviously, they played Duke. They played Providence, mm-hmm. who's in the play-in game. They played Virginia Tech twice, and they played Villanova. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of experience against teams in that region.
That is going to be very, very entertaining. Now, everywhere else, all the other regions, Midwest, South, and the West, have all got two ACC teams. I like the way it's been spread out, because earlier in the year, as I was saying, we went over the bracketology. They were clumping them, which I don't like. If you're going to put teams, you're going to put a lot of teams from mm-hmm. one conference in there. You need to spread them out, you know. So I really like the way, and I think as you pointed out, Chris, the selection committee has really done a good job. I look at these teams and I'm going, boy, this is going to be some very competitive ball. This pleasantly surprises me. So, you know, let's stick with you, Chris, here and talk a little bit about the spreading out teams in the regions a little more.
Well, as you might remember, Jim, they kind of did that last year. Remember how many teams that the ACC got into the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight? It was really looking like a juicy opportunity to have a complete ACC Final Four last year. So by spreading them out this year as well, I really can't see – don't really want to go out and predict that that's going to happen again, though, as the grouping that we had last year. But it seems rife for that opportunity, because you know we've got a one, a two seed. We've got teams all spread all over the place that can make deep runs. Notre Dame, you know as well as I do, and congratulations, Jim. By the way, a couple weeks ago we made a prediction of what teams are going to be the surprise team in the ACC tournament. Jim picked Notre Dame, so Will and I bow down to you on that, by the way.
And who did I pick that wasn't going to make it in to the NCAA? Not to make light of that, but just saying.
Just saying.
Continue.
No, but I'm looking at this bracket here, guys, here with you together. I can see Notre Dame just getting on a run there. I mean, they can shoot with anybody. And Bonzi Colson is just—he's just unstoppable. If you watched him on those pick and rolls, and God, he just gets down there low in the paint with any momentum, and forget it—it's an automatic two. But you know, I can see Louisville getting all with the Elite Eight. I wouldn't predict a win over Kansas, but you know, you just don't know. With the dance here, that glass slipper can fit anybody.
So, Will. Taking that thought that Chris has there and expanding a little bit further, let's take a look at do you think that with all of that intense competition during the season and especially there at the end in the conference championship, that it is fine-tuned these ACC teams to maybe take on somebody like Kansas and bump them off?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, it depends on it's all about the right matchups, really. And take a look at an example. We can look at a Duke who has a pretty, you know, the bottom of the draw looks pretty easy for them going into, you know, going into the second weekend. And they, you know, if it goes chalky, which it obviously won't, they could meet Villanova who Duke match up pretty well with Villanova, because you know Duke can hit the three pretty well. Maybe Villanova can too, but Duke, since I like their front court better than Villanova's, to be perfectly honest. Like you Louisville, and if they could make it, especially with the way they defend, and they're obviously getting a lot of scoring from a guy like Donovan Mitchell and, you know, Dang Adele, you know, and Asad Mahmood in the inside. They could match up very well with Kansas. I mean, obviously Carolina's Carolina. We saw what they can do, as so long as Joel Berry isn't in foul trouble. And even in the West, when you've got Florida State as a three, they're playing the first two games in the state of Florida, and we know how well they play in that state. If they can get through that, I mean, it's not out of their own possibility. They could face, you know, a Sweet 16 matchup against, say, Arizona, who, I mean, they can shoot. They'd be a pretty. I mean, Arizona might be the favorite, but you do certainly can. Florida State could win that game if Dwayne Bacon can get hot again. And I mean, we've seen he's capable of doing that. And if he can get past that, they can match up very well with Gonzaga as well.
He can get on a tear, and it's all over for the other team, as we well know.
And we obviously didn't even mention Notre Dame, who can get hot too in that West region. I mean, we see how well they can hit the three, and if they can keep that up, you know, they can go very far.
Yeah, if they go on a real tear on outside the arc, then again, other teams are going to be in some real trouble. All right, guys, let's make a pick here. Wake Forest has got to play in, and that's going to be in Dayton. They're going to go up against Kansas State. Who are we picking, Wake Forest or Kansas State, Will?
I like Wake in this game because they have John Collins, who, you know, who in my opinion should have been ACC Player of the Year, and he, to me, is probably the best player on the court, so I'm going to give Wake the advantage there.
All right, and Chris, your thoughts on that?
I like Wake as well.
I'm going with Wake as well. I just don't see that Kansas State has anything that can stop Wake Forest. I think that Wake Forest, unfortunately, with that play-in, I hate it that they actually have to prove that they're worthy, because I think that they should have at least been, I don't know, you know, maybe you guys will disagree with me, but I think at least a 9. You know, maybe that's a little high, but at least a 9.
Well, they haven't been in a while there, Jim, and but that said, I'll not only go ahead and pick them, beat Kansas State, I'll take them over Cincinnati. I'll go make that bold pick right away.
Yeah. I actually tweeted that out earlier. I consider it. I want to do a little more of a deep dive into Cincinnati to see their strengths and weaknesses, but I could certainly see it.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think all three of us are thinking the same thing.
Now,
I see.
Since they won 20 in a row earlier this year, so that's keep that in mind.
So we'll see what happens. But, I guess all three of us are going to go for Wake across the line for against Kansas State, and meeting up with Cincinnati, they're going to take them too. I just don't see that is an unrealistic expectation. Anybody who's had an opportunity to watch Wake Forest, and like you said, Will, it might be a good thing to take a little more of a deep dive on some of the tape on Cincinnati, but anybody who's watched Wake Forest at all this season, especially as the season's progressed, know that team really is starting to shine, and it's hitting its stride at the right time. UNC being a number one, going up against Texas Southern, I don't see there's any issue to even discuss there. The FSU and FGCU game, you know, we've touched on that. Notre Dame, Princeton, okay. Here's where it starts to get a little more entertaining. Over in the East, Wisconsin and Virginia Tech. So, Chris, your thoughts on that game?
Well, if you're playing Virginia Tech, who do you guard? I mean, who is it? you have contributions coming from all over the place. I mean, against Florida State, I watched 10 guys get action on the court there. That was a loss. But, you know, it tells you that Buzz isn't afraid to throw it all out there. And the guys, and we've talked about this, that these guys are playing better, actually, since losing their leading scorer. In a sense, as far as a team, Will can lead in a little bit more to how good Wisconsin is because that's in his more of a region and probably gets more read on them. But, you know, Virginia Tech could be a dangerous team in the sense that, you know, where do you circle on the depth chart that you got to watch this guy, got to watch that guy? Who do you put your best defender on? I like Virginia Tech's chances on this to get to the second round.
Well, let's slide on over to Will. And since you are out in that neck of the woods, what are your thoughts on Wisconsin and Virginia Tech?
I like the Hokies in this one. The key factor for me is three-point percentage. Wisconsin is 306th in the country in three-point defense. Virginia Tech, they're ranked 9th in three-point percentage on offense. So that really swings swings it in the Hokies' favor for me. While Wisconsin's good at defending the two, I don't see how Virginia Tech's going to take a lot of twos in this game. I think they're going to shoot a lot of threes. I think this could be a game where the Hokies, if they can hit a lot of threes, will be riding that to a victory.
Well, let's stick with you, Will, since we're going to talk about Virginia now. And this is another one of those games where the guys on the CBS program were saying that this could be one of those upsets. Virginia against UNC Wilmington. And UNC Wilmington is by no means of the imagination a toss-away team.
No, they there's a reason there. A lot of people picked them as a potential upset bid. Obviously, they won the Colonial. They're 29-5 coming into tournament play. They have lost to Clemson, actually. That they did play an ACC team earlier in the year. What Wilmington does really well is turnovers. They don't turn the ball over on offense. They're second in the country in terms of turnover percentage. But they are very good defensively at turning you over. They're actually turn opponents over at a 20% clip, which is 55th in the country. What might give Virginia the favor, though, is Wilmington hasn't faced a team like this year. I mean, Virginia is obviously the number one defense in the country. They defend really well. They're top 30 in three-point percentage and two-point percentage on defense. Obviously Virginia hits the three very well. That's where I think really, if as long as Virginia doesn't have a clunker of a game like they've been prone to do at times, they should win pretty comfortably. But I tell you what, I'm not very comfortable saying that, but I still think Virginia wins. And I tell you what, I've tweeted this out while the brackets were going on. UNC Wilmington actually scares me as a matchup more than Florida does as a second-round opponent.
Interesting. Chris, your thoughts on the game in your backyard, almost backyard, Orlando, Virginia, and UNC Wilmington?
Well, I got to say, who hits the panic button first is what I think here, because Virginia's been doing it a lot with youth. And thank goodness they've had good leadership at the point with London Parentis coming in here. Wilmington only losing five games, you can go right down the stats with Will there, and that's good stuff there. But where I look at a team that's only lost five games out of over 30. They know how to do something right, and I also look at rosters, and I see a lot of experience on that roster versus Virginia's a lot of young kids on there. Talent-wise, I mean, Virginia is hands down the better team here, and I like them to win this game. But as Will alluded to, Virginia's prone to just the go to sleep and just forget where they're at. And if that happens here, Wilmington is certainly good enough to jump up and grab that opportunity. I actually, though, like Virginia getting to the Sweet 16 almost, actually, because I think, I agree with Will again on this here, I think Wilmington may be even tougher matchup than Florida is. I think Florida actually, as I'm listening to and reading tweets from Florida fans around here, they are very worried about meeting Virginia in the second round. They do not think this is a good draw for them getting through to the Sweet 16.
Interesting that Florida fans are worried about Virginia as the next game. They're looking past East Tennessee State. The guys on the CBS Selection Show, pretty much we're all saying East Tennessee State, that's the team to watch. And they're picking East Tennessee State to bump off Florida. So Florida better not look past East Tennessee State. I think that would be a very big mistake. And I can tell you this, a matchup between Florida and Virginia, I'm pretty sure Virginia would have that game. Let's look at these other games real quickly, because these really aren't, I hate to say this, much of a matchup. Duke and Troy, and we'll give that one to Duke. Louisville, Jacksonville State, mm-hmm. Not too concerned about that. But here's the game that could be very entertaining. And we'll stick with you, Chris. Again, this is kind of a backyard sort of thing, even though it's several hundred miles away. Number 8 seed Miami takes on number 9 Michigan State. Now, this is a game that has some potential.
Yes, as much potential as there is for beer in my fridge. Lots of it.
Lots.
Lots of it. Yeah, I like this. Is going to be a fun game to watch. Miami has just snuck up on people all year, except for the committee apparently and us. It's a good seeding for them. I don't think this is a game that really people should really want to miss, because this is going to be a fast-paced game. I think Miami is going to be able to keep it out of that half-court style. Michigan State's going to want to keep this slowed down. They're certainly capable of it in that slow-grinding style. I think Miami's more battle-tested. The Big Ten was really down this year, and certainly Izzo knows what he's doing, and certainly that's a roster that's not lacking of talent. But I just like Miami in this matchup to impose their will. I can see them winning this by like 80-68.
You know, I think a lot of people talk about, and this is the thing that just struck me when you said Izzo. That's basically all I've heard about that team. Now, granted, there are some really good players on Michigan State. I mean, there's never any denying that. But The thing that I hear more than anything at all is Izzo. Well, Larrañaga is nothing to sneeze at either. So
he may be the most underrated 500 win coach of all time.
The two guys, it's their players that are going to win that game ultimately. And granted, we've got two coaches here that are really savvy and great when it comes to leading their teams to victory. Mm-hmm. But let's just toss out the names of the coaches and worry about who's on the court doing what. Will, your thoughts on that Miami and Michigan State matchup? That's another team up in your sort of neck of the woods, the Midwest.
Where I think Miami might have the advantage is their rebounding ability. We've seen what they've been able to do in terms of rebounding with ACC opponents. They out-rebounded North Carolina, you know, during their one meeting earlier this year, which, you know, not many teams can do that. And that's one of their strong, and obviously they've gotten a lot of contributions from, you know, Davon Reed, Jaquan Newton, and so on and so forth. But they're a team that's, you know, Bruce Brown's another person I was forgetting, the freshman who's come on very nicely as the season's progressed. But this is one of those situations where I think a tested team like Miami and in the ACC, that will ultimately help them in a game like this. I do think Miami wins, but I don't think it's going to be the blowout that Chris thinks. I think it's going to be about a 2-3 point game. It's going to be like a 69-66 type game. But most importantly,
beer on it.
You'll bet beer on anything.
Well, we won't need to bet beer in order to get you some, especially once I can get my hands on some Bald Man.
You're talking about beer, right?
Yes. None of us are bald. So.
Not yet. Oh, goodness. Well, earlier we were talking about bracketology and stuff. Chris, you want to carry the ball with us there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hey, you want to hit me for a layup in the pick and roll? Definitely.
Sure.
Well, we split the difference between Joe Lunardi and Jerry Palm in bracketology. Lunardi has 10, Palm 8. The difference, of course, is what bracket teams were selected. The East with 3, ACC teams, and the rest. Potentially with 2 apiece. That depends on Wake Forest advancing out of Dayton.
Yeah. And, again, any surprise, guys, about any of the bracketology picks? Because we've kind of gone back and forth on this and who we thought did a better job with bracketology. It's just, you know, as Chris said, we split the difference between Lunardi and Palm this year. You know, some of these guys were picking Syracuse as being in, others were not.
Well, as I alluded to earlier, I mean, we talked about common sense took over on the bids here. Yeah, you knew my feelings on this, and Syracuse just didn't deserve this year. Getting in for them would have been purely on street credentials. Especially that loss to St. John's. But Boeheim's been scheduling weak on non-conference for years. There was a time span where he did not schedule a single game outside of the state of New York before conference play.
Hmm.
And if he had his way, he would make that happen in the ACC tournament, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, he's alluded to that.
Yeah.
I think just a bit, right? You know? So we're going to ship him to Greensboro in the offseason.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the big difference was who picked Syracuse and who didn't. I was obviously, I was in the camp of leaving Syracuse out, and that was the difference between getting the 9 and 10 teams in this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I again, bracketology is just, it's all about projecting something and looking at the RPI, strength of schedule, and getting a feel for, you know, where are we going with teams? Are they performing well? Who are they playing head to head? How did they perform against a team that played another team? And the point about playing teams in non-conference games that are not really challenging, and then when you lose those, especially, I think that just it kills you. And the ACC has taken a hint from other conferences in football and started to expand, and I think it's paid off. I think they need to start thinking the same way with their basketball. There are just some teams that are just not going to do you any good. And I think one of the things that's helped Duke is that they played Kentucky early. Mm-hmm. Now, they lost, yep. But, I mean, big whoop, right? I mean, it's an early season loss, and it was close. And that really did them a lot of good in the long run. So playing really tough teams early is a good thing. It's not going to hurt you in the long run. It's going to make you a better team. And I think that's something that maybe needs to come into consideration when the basketball folks sit down and start talking about what are we going to do and how are we going to make ourselves stronger. That may come into play. Maybe they don't need to make themselves any stronger. I mean, you know, look, they've got the most selections of any conference in the NCAA.
Right.
But will it stay that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the big question. Is it going to stay that way?
All glory is fleeting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Indeed it is. Well, listen, I'm going to run down the ACC teams invited to the NIT tournament a little later in the podcast, so we'll know a little more about how that all ends up. We'll have a women's NCAA selection podcast this week as well. We already know that Notre Dame moves forward with an automatic bid as the winners of the ACC championship. Let's back up and talk a little bit about the ACC men's basketball tournament.
Yes, let's do that. Obviously, Duke won, beating Notre Dame 75-69. But to go back a little bit to how we got there, I wanted to bring up some highlights for the week. And one of my calls that I was 50-50 right on was Wake Forest Virginia Tech, where I said Wake would win in what would be the highest scoring game of the tournament. Well, Virginia Tech won, so that I was wrong on that, but I was far and away right on the fact that it was the highest scoring game of the tournament. It wasn't even close. It was 99-90. So there's 189 points total scored, and I believe that I think there was a couple games that got in the high 170s, but nothing close to that. Duke, obviously, they beat Louisville 80-77, and they beat North Carolina 93-83, bringing those two up because Duke came back from double-digit deficits in both games to win. They came back, and they say Louisville was there for the whole way, but Duke was just better at the end. Louisville couldn't get a good shot off at the end, and Duke was able to hold on for a win. Florida State ended up being Virginia Tech 74-68, and was a pretty competitive ball game. Hokies obviously, you know, playing very well without Chris Clark, and will be interesting to see what they do going forward. So I think at this point, the fact that they got in, I think this is an absolute bonus for the Hokies. This is far and away a successful season, no matter what happens from here on out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, I knew Chris would agree with me on that. Notre Dame blew out Virginia of 71-58, and what was the worst offensive and defensive performance I've seen from Virginia probably since that, maybe the North Carolina game, but that was those are the kind of clunkers that I've been worried about seeing Virginia put up in the Wilmington game, because they have been prone to that from time to time. But Notre Dame went off and held off Florida State 77-73 in the semifinal, thanks to their three-point shooting, which, you know, they've hit a ridiculous amount of threes against Florida State this year. I can't remember the exact number they hit in that game, but I remember when they faced them in Tallahassee, they hit like 18 or something like that and still lost.
It was 19. You're pretty close.
19, yeah. Just doing it off the top of my head, but I know they hit a bunch of threes again against Florida State. And
I remember every one of them, trust me.
But, yeah, as far as the championship game, obviously, as I said, Duke won 75-69. And the game basically played out was Duke was in control for about the first 35, 36 minutes. Then Notre Dame came back, actually was pretty even with them at halftime. Notre Dame was in, you know, would pull ahead, then Duke would come back, and then finally at the end, Duke just pulled away, just thanks to three-point shooting and some timely defense. And they shot 60% for the game, and in the second half shot 66%, which this is stuff that, and let's be real, this is stuff that's not sustainable in the long term. I don't think they're going to keep shooting 60% going forward in the NCAA tournament, but for a four-game stretch, this is an unbelievable accomplishment by Duke, with the two double-digit comebacks plus the insane shooting. And I tell you what, you know who, like obviously we've seen just how great Luke Kennard has been. Jason Tatum is a star. He was a star of that tournament for me, and
he really shined. Yep.
He played more like a junior than a freshman in that tournament. His stock definitely rose to nowhere, probably a top three pick in the upcoming drafts. I think he's got to go after this.
So, he became a leader in the ACC tournament. That's bona fide.
Yeah. And if Duke does make a run, it's because of him, as much as it is Luke Kennard.
Yeah, indeed. You know, something that struck me, and I'm just going to be a little bit melancholy here for just a moment. I have watched over the years Coach K, and in some ways I'll be quite frank about it. I've been like most people in the ACC. Sometimes you resent Duke and Coach K. Sometimes you absolutely just love him to death. He is somebody who I admire greatly as a coach. And I was sitting there thinking to myself and looking at him and thinking, you know, it's not as if he's an older guy, but he is getting up in years and he's had multiple surgeries. And I just thought to myself, what a sad day it's going to be when he stops coaching. You know, and I felt the same way when Dean Smith departed.
Yes. Yep.
And it's just something that crossed my mind, and I just wanted to share that because there will come a time, and I hope it's no time soon, to be quite frank, and I know that just drives people from other teams crazy, but we do have that up-and-coming echelon of coaches, the Tony Bennett's and whatnot are coming up. But Coach K is something special, and I think that every person in the ACC ought to appreciate him for what he is. He is a gem. He's made a lot of great contributions to this conference and basketball in this country, and we need to remember that. So I'm off my melancholy stage now. I just wanted to...
Old gloomy Jim, we've seen enough of that.
I just wanted to throw that in there, just to appreciate people when you have them. So we have the nine teams earning a seed in NCAA tournament action. How about in the NIT? Well, the ACC takes the top seed in the NIT with Syracuse, one of four number one seeds among 32 teams selected. Clemson picked as a number two seed. They're going to be behind number one seed Iowa in their quadrant. Georgia Tech is number six in the Syracuse quadrant. The Yellow Jackets will take on number 3 Indiana in Atlanta as the Hoosiers facilities are under renovation. The Tigers, they're going to be facing number 7 Oakland in Clemson. Top seed Syracuse will, in a bit of irony, play host to number 8 UNC Greensboro. Initial games are played at the higher seed unless otherwise noted, and from the semifinals on, they're going to be at Madison Square Garden. Now, something very interesting. The NCAA Playing Rules Oversight Panel has approved experimental rules that will reset team fouls to 0 at the end of 10-minute segments. Now, you get that? 10-minute segments. Listen for the rest of this. Anyway, at each half in the upcoming postseason tournament, the games will be played in 4 10-minute, as they're calling them now, this is their verbiage, segments, not quarters, 10-minute segments. The panel also approved experimental rules that will reset the shot clock to 20 seconds instead of 30 seconds at times when the ball is inbounded in the front court during games in the NIT. The experimental rule regarding resetting the team fouls, the 1-and-1 free throw bonus will not occur. Instead, teams will shoot 2 free throws. Just some changes there in the NIT. Some interesting stuff coming up. 3 teams again getting into the NIT. Syracuse with the number 1 seed, Clemson a number 2 seed, Georgia Tech is a number 6 seed. Well, guys, now the fun really begins as basketball heads into the win or go home part of the season. And that tends to inspire teams quite a bit. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Will?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this NCAA tournament. It's always the most wonderful time of the year. And what says the most wonderful time of year than getting dumped on with snow as we are currently getting here in Minnesota as I record? Seems to happen every time. But it's also, we just had the state high school hockey tournament, which kind of coincides. So we always get a big snowstorm around this time of year. And we're getting a few inches of snow here as we speak. So and that's heading out east. So bundle up and be ready for it, East Coast.
Headed north of me. That's all that, that matters. And Chris is going, well, it's 1,000-plus miles north of me. So
he's raising a finger at us, probably.
Yeah, actually, I'll be headed to the beach here in a few days, actually.
Oh, gee.
Going back to my hometown of West Palm Beach here in a couple of days. So. Mm-hmm. My final thought so alludes back to a time of my youth. This today, whenever the brackets came out, was like a family holiday. My father was such a huge college basketball fan, fan of Kentucky, and a season ticket holder for years here at South Florida, at USF. And my father passed back in 2006, but my mother still talks about when she joked back in those days when she was married 11 months of the year, and she was a widow in the month of March, because it was the dedication to the tournament, just following through and learning about the passion of fighting for one more day. And we've been watching these in the conference tournaments, and this is something a lot of people can identify with, I think. But my father talked to me about teamwork and getting one more day together for people you'll never be together with again the rest of your life. And watching these young men play and try to win and hit that big shot at the buzzer so they can get one more day together and fight for tomorrow, as those 12 or 13 guys and girls are going to be doing here in a few days. There's something beautiful about that. There's something wonderful and transcendent about it. And I just want to thank my father on this podcast for this. This brings back great memories today. And I'll be filling out my brackets as soon as I feel as we finish recording here. But, you know, it's a beautiful time of year. And I love watching these young men hang on to their youth, especially the seniors in these teams that, you know, they're not going to the NBA. They're not going overseas. You know, the guys at the Florida Gulf Coast, the guys at the Daytons, the guys at Northwestern. Northwestern, by the way, not in our conference, but sure, we want to give a tip of our cap to them. They're first bid ever. That's something special about that. There's a lot of great stories and beautiful things in college basketball and the national tournament, and we're going to see some spectacular stuff in and out of the ACC coming in the next 3 weeks.
This has been ACC Nation Podcast. For Chris Bond and Will Ogenin, I'm Jim Quist.
Skol Sláinte.